welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. This week, I'm talking with Mikhail Jackson, creative director for St. John's University Athletics. We chat about how, as an English lit major, he got into graphic design by making flyers for his fraternity, creating a brand with the Red Storm that focuses on the grittiness and culture of New York City, how keeping a disciplined schedule helps him avoid overworking himself and burnout, what he's learned through mentoring students and interns, and more, all right after this. It's no secret that I love Jack Prince. They're a longtime sponsor of the podcast and Creative South. Plus, they do great work. Whether they're making our pop-up displays and tablecloths or printing notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. This year, they are printing new Creative South t-shirts for me and the podcast stickers that have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products just in time for Creative South. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, or stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers starting at $149. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATE15CS at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. If you like the Creative South podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Mikhail, thanks for joining me tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. So let's start at the very beginning. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Detroit, west side of Detroit. I went to high school at Cass Tech and went to University of Michigan for undergrad.
Good school.
Yeah. You know, Harbaugh doing big things.
Yeah. When you were growing up, what were you into? Were you into art or what, how did you progress through high school to end up at University of Michigan? What were you interested in?
So I wasn't big into art, even though I kind of doodled a little bit, but like art wasn't really my thing. I was into sports. I was into, you know, academics, you know, I was, you know, academic games. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. If you've heard of that, so mm-hmm. you know, games
like, I wasn't good enough to be asked to be in them. but I am aware of what they are.
Okay. Yeah, so I was real big into academic games in high school, and okay. You know, I was actually like on the academic games team over there, and like, you know, we won a lot of state championships, won a national championship in like the math games, so mm-hmm. you know, so that kind of piqued my interest. And from there, I went to Michigan. My older brother, you know, had gone there 2 years prior, so I followed in his footsteps. And then my younger brother followed me. And then years later, you know, I think two or three other siblings followed me there as well. So,
and you're one of, is it seven?
Yeah. There's seven of us. So I'm the second oldest of seven.
Do you, just out of curiosity, do you know all of their names and birthdays?
Yeah, hey, I know it all. Like the youngest one, she's in college right now, so it's a long age range.
And do your parents have any hair left that isn't gray?
Yeah, look, hey, they still have black hair. They Right now, hey, they're enjoying life right now, living their best life.
Yeah. I can't imagine having that many siblings. That must have been pretty crazy growing up. Not a lot of peace and quiet.
Yeah, no. Hey, look, I mean, on my account, it was fun because, you know, we always had someone to play ball with, and then, you know, playing Madden or NBA Live, you know, 2K, mm-hmm. you know, 2K, you know, once, you know, 2000 came around. But, you know, sure. we've always had somebody to roll with. And, you know, it was definitely fun to grow up with, you know, seven kids in the house.
Yeah. So when you get out of high school and you end up at Michigan, what do you start studying?
So I'm at Michigan and I started studying English. So I ended up majoring in English literature because, you know, I wasn't big into math. And with English, I felt that there couldn't be a wrong answer. The mindset was, okay, like in math, if I'm taking a final, there's a right answer, there's a wrong answer. All right.
But sure.
In English, I'm like, okay, well, in English, I can write a paper. And as long as I prove my theory and I have, you know, the proper backup, I have the proper references, you can't fail me if I write a very good paper. And you know, no matter what the topic was, if I'm proving my theory or proving everything that I'm saying and
give a convincing argument.
Right.
All that.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, there's no way you can fail me. So I majored in English literature. I like to read. I like to write, use, you know, creative expression. But it wasn't until maybe my junior year where I was kind of getting bored with English and somebody in my fraternity was creating like a party flyer or an event flyer for one mm-hmm. of one of our events. And I looked at him. I said, hey, what is that? You know, what are you doing right there? And he said, you know, oh, this is Photoshop. So I'm like, oh, man, hey, can you put whatever you got on your computer on my computer? And he, you know, so I bought a computer. And as soon as it came in the mail, I gave him the box. You know, he opened it up and started, you know, install Photoshop.
And completely legally.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in case Adobe's listening, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I went from there, and you know, I learned on my own. And this is before YouTube even existed. This is just sure. trial and error. You know, no real help. Just you make something, you put it out there, and you learn from there.
So did you continue with being the English lit major, or did you switch yeah. majors at that point?
No, I was so deep into that major. I wasn't, you know, it's not like I was, you know, enjoying.
You weren't stupid.
Right. I said, okay, well, let me go ahead and, you know, finish the English major. Because, you know, this is my junior year. I mean, I didn't know if I even wanted to do design, you know, as a career. I mean, like, honestly speaking, when it was time for me to look for jobs my senior year, I didn't want to go into design. I said, well, I'm not looking for design jobs mm-hmm. unless it's in sports. And then, mm-hmm. you know, and then some jobs opened up in sports. But yeah, I finished the English degree and graduated 4 years and just kept designing.
Good for you. It took me a lot longer.
hey, it happens. You know, it's not a matter of when you finish, it's that you finish.
And that's what I try to tell my parents still yeah. to this day. Yeah. And I've been out of school for 20 years now.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, in my defense, they both have master's degrees. Yeah. So. Yeah.
To each his own.
My brother and I don't.
Hey, you know, hey, all I have is a bachelor's as well. You know, I have a few other siblings who, you know, have a master's in law degrees, but, you know, I was satisfied with school, you know, in undergrad. I was good.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. But you always have the fallback of you work at a university, so
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
If you want, you could. You know, I'm sure they give you a nice tuition discount.
I could. I could go back, and I could go in anytime I want to. The option is still on the table.
There you go.
So it's there.
Gotcha. So you have no plans when you get out of college to go into design. What do you end up doing?
The short answer, I went into design, long story short, but so sure. what happened was I was searching for jobs and nothing was really sticking. And, you know, so I started interviewing. So I interviewed at ABC. So I'm at Michigan and my girlfriend, who's my wife now, she moved to New York to pursue a career in fashion. So I'm like, okay. I'll move to New York too, but I'm not coming out unless I find a job. So
sure.
I start interviewing and I was interviewing at ABC for like a sales, TV sales position. All right. Mm-hmm. And I was interviewing there. And then at the same time, I interviewed at like a Division III school on Long Island, the Merchant Marine Academy. in their sport, their sports information, or, you know, better known as like media relations department. And so I interviewed both places, and the Merchant Marine Academy offered me a job, and ABC offered me a job. Now I'm looking at this like, hey, I never even heard of the Merchant Marine Academy.
Let alone, I was about to say, I didn't even know that was a thing. I mean, I know you hear about the Merchant Marines growing up, but it's always like in movies. So I thought it was like a made up thing.
Yeah, no, no. I learned a lot, you know, from that interview. And just working there, it was it's one of five, you know, U.S. service academies. So, I mean, it's it's pretty legit. I mean, it's tucked away on the north end of Long Island, and it's very formal over there. So, you know, here I am after college. I had these two options on the table: the Merchant Marine Academy. You know, I could work in sports, Division III, never heard of it. Or ABC. Everyone's heard of ABC. I'll be selling commercials for like ESPN and all those things. But ultimately I said, you know what? I want to work in sports, and they hired me because I had a design background. They said, oh, you could design brochures and stuff and our media guides. I'm like, hey, like, I'm just trying to work in sports. So I took the job, and you know, the good thing about that, I passed over the, you know, I sent one of my friends, you know, I just recommended my friend for that job because I turned down ABC. And they looked at him, and they hired my friend, you know, from school, which is a good thing. And it brought him to New York, and, you know, and it started his whole, you know, his whole story that he tells people. And then he shouted me out because, you know, I gave him his shot in New York. And, you know, so it was a good thing.
And it's always nice to, you know, have an instant support system when you move somewhere new. So that that must have been nice for you as well.
Yeah, it was, because you know, he was up here in New York because, you know, he was, you know, one of my close, you know, fraternity brothers and friends. And then, you know, my girlfriend, you know, was up in New York. And, you know, so, hey, at that point, I got two people I'm close with in New York. So it's, you know, it's an easier transition. So, it was, you know, look, we had a good time, and I was at the Merchant Marine Academy for, you know, just a few months. And then the job at St. John's opened up, and, you know, I've been there, you know, ever since, you know, that's 11 years.
So you've really only had two jobs since college.
Two
different companies. Let me rephrase.
Okay. Yeah. So two full-time jobs. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, we'll get into the freelance. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So you know, two jobs. That's all I've had since college. You know, I've been here, and the one job I only had for 5 months, you know, because I left as soon as the St. John's gig opened up. So, yeah, so I've been here since I graduated.
Gotcha. So real quickly, from your time at Merchant Marines, was there another designer on staff? Since you were, and I'm asking this since you were self-taught, you know, was there someone else there to bounce ideas off of and help you kind of grow early on?
No. Even in college when I was designing like flyers for the fraternity, you know, for parties and stuff. And then I started designing creative materials for the fraternity council as a whole at, you know, at the university. And then like flyers for like, you know, a club or restaurant owner in the city. You know, it was just me, you know, in my room. So when I get to the Merchant Marine Academy, look, it's really like it's a media relations job, you know, sports information. And an aspect of that job is to design media guides, brochures and schedule posters, you know, with whatever you could. So like there's no other designers on staff. I mean, it was just me and no one else knew Photoshop. No one knew any of that stuff. It was just me. No one to bounce ideas off of. Just be putting the stuff out there. I mean, looking back, it was, you know, it was bad, like some bad stuff that I produced. But I mean, look.
I mean, that's what your first job is supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's a learning experience.
But like, it was fun. Honestly.
Yeah. So after that, you move on to St. John's. What do you start off doing there? Because I know you, like you said, you've been there 11 years, right?
Yep, 11 years. Yeah, so my position at St. John's has evolved since then. So I started in 07, I think August of 07. And it was primarily a a publications coordinator role. So I just laid out media guides, magazines.
So a lot of production work?
Yeah, that's all it was. And again, I was the only designer on staff. And this is when the industry was, a lot of schools had just started to maybe have a designer on their staff. Mm-hmm. It was in the early stages, of that whole boom. But yeah, it was just laying out media guides when media guides was used as a recruiting tool. Now it's like social media, video, like it's a whole nother game.
So you start off, you're doing production work. You're still kind of the only person there. Is it all focused on sports or is it kind of general all around stuff?
No, it's all sports. Because when I got into design, I didn't want to design like anything other than sports. I mean, because like when I first started off, I didn't like design that much. I mean, I was a little kid. Like, I don't want to design, something for, just a regular old, someone selling stoves and you're designing some artwork for a stove and that, that didn't interest me at all. But what interested me was like, oh, okay, if I'm watching this basketball game and I could design something related to the basketball game, so as a fan, I would be reading and looking at it anyways. Let me and to have the opportunity to make it, like, wow, that's cool. So started off just doing media guides and that type of stuff, and as the years progressed, my role had evolved. And when you're at a company and a school for so long, you get to make the position what it is, and you can evolve with it and you see things and you gain different experiences where, you start to bring it to the table and you can make the brand what you want.
Mm-hmm. So as your role is progressing, what skills are you picking up that you didn't expect to learn and maybe came out of, just left field?
Oh, well, when I first started, out there, like, not many people know this, but anyone who talks to me in my office and I give them the whole story. Like, I didn't know InDesign when I started the job. So I didn't know Illustrator. Like, I walked in with just Photoshop experience, but I had the desire to learn it. And, you just go in there and I ask a lot of questions to, at the time, this was 11 years ago. I'm asking questions to our printer, like in terms of like, hey, how do you set up this InDesign file? How do you do this? What's the proper things, when I'm exporting something. So, I would ask a lot of questions to a lot of people and just trial and error, just getting files and just working with it. And, like if you're in a program for, long enough and you're constantly on YouTube, constantly on blogs and going through tutorials, you'll eventually figure it out. And then After Effects, all of the design programs that have come out in the last 10 or 11 years, I've probably, dabbled in, but like you learn different skills along the way. But the most important thing, I've learned was just the ability to build a brand and just think outside of design and understand the role design has, in terms of, the look and the feel of a athletics team, like on the court, what they're wearing. How we're portrayed on TV. So it's not just, pen to paper. It's, like there's this larger strategy in mind.
Sure. So, well, let's talk about that building of the brand and how have you been able to shape the brand and restructure? Because especially for sports teams, even if it's at a university level, 11 years is a long time to maintain one look. So you guys have obviously changed things up and grown in your time period. Then how are you learning to build a brand? How are you learning to ask the questions of the stakeholders to make sure that you're meeting everybody's needs?
Well, okay. So when I first started, like, the design process was more about, okay, what are our posters looking like? Okay, this year's theme is, okay, maybe I have all these flares and maybe some paper tears or this metallic look on all the posters and the promotional materials. But you know, as my position evolved and as I grew as a designer and a creator, you know, I started to see like the larger picture and the message that, you know, I wanted to put out, which was, you know, so at St. John's, we put out We Are New York's Team, which is,
right,
you know, just a staple in the city. And we want to make sure that, you know, the people know, first and foremost, within the city and within the tri-state area that, you know, hey, we are New York's team. So it's, you know, in terms of design and the brand behind it, it's, you know, a lot of cityscapes, making sure people recognize that red and white is our primary colors, and just emphasize, you know, just the grittiness and the authenticity of New York, and the diversity of New York when it comes to music, backgrounds, just the type of flair that an athlete would have when you say that, hey, you know, like you play in New York, and you know, and how you represented, you know, on the court, you know, making sure that the student athletes have on something that, you know, when they're looking in the mirror or they're watching themselves on TV, or even if a recruit is watching them, you know, on television, you know, that they sure. they have the most fashionable uniforms. And even if they're walking through an airport, you know, we want them to see that, okay, wow, you know, Under Armour, you know, producing, you know, some pretty cool stuff. And then, you know, and put that in line with the social media creative and the print materials and how we're being portrayed, you know, in our commercials or, you know, in an intro video or anything along those lines. So, you know, so being at a university for 11 years, it's comforting because you know where you want to go, and there's a consistency in it. So someone's sure. not going to come in and just, you know, ruin a good thing. And now you're having identity issues that, you know, that we've had before I've gotten there. I think they changed logo several times over the course of just a few years. But, you know, when there's consistency in a department, you can grow a lot more and a lot faster, especially if you're open to just new ideas from, you know, different people like I am.
Sure.
I'm an open book.
Sure. Sure. When you're talking to stakeholders, and because you've got a lot of people you've got to satisfy when it comes to things. You've got, you know, obviously the staff and faculty, you've got the players, you've got recruits coming in, you've got, you know, the alumni, you've got all these different facets that you've got to balance. How do you keep that in mind when you're designing things?
Well, when you've been at a place for a while, you understand, you know, like there are the websites, you hear the chatter, you hear, you know, like there's the divide between the new fan and the older fan.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, if you're going to, you know, please, you know, the fans, you know, if there's a disconnect between the people who really connected with the Red Men versus, you know, when we change over to the Red Storm, you know, some people, you know, maybe didn't like the move. So, you know, an emphasis there is like, okay, well, you know, my mindset is, you know, St. John's is the brand. So let's push St. John's, like the name. Everyone connects with St. John's. So, I mean, who's going to get upset over, you know, St. John's? You know, that's the name.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just in terms of, you know, all the stakeholders, well, look, hey, you know, no, if I know that no one's going to get upset over pushing St. John's as the brand message and having We Are New York's Team, which is something that, you know, they've been, you know, we've been saying for a while. And, you know, I think it preceded me before I got there. You know, we just kind of took it to a different level. But, you know, it's like, you know, it's a collaborative environment. You know, we do have different meetings and we run ideas just to make sure we are on the same page. And it's a slow crawl. We just don't decide to do something and then just throw it out there. Like, no, it's, you know, you kind of test it, you know, for a year on certain things. And, you know, it kind of picks up, you know, you talk to some more people and, you know, and maybe you do one thing one year. Maybe you put it on a shirt the next year. You know, maybe you put it on the court the next. So like it's, you know, it's a slow crawl. And once people, you know, recognize it and see that, okay, hey, this is a positive thing that's going on, it's you know, it's an easier sell if there's buy-in.
Gotcha. Do you think, speaking of that, the slow crawl and the testing it, do you think in the digital age, especially with social media and all that stuff, you have as much time to test things out, or is it a faster iteration process?
Well, with the larger brand message, is a slower crawl. Sure. Because, you know, like you're trying to push a certain identity, where I realize mm-hmm. that we are New York's team. It's a long-term play. You're not going to build that because you have other schools who, you know, have different iterations of that slogan that they're trying to, you know, sure. associate themselves with the largest media market, you know, in the country. So, you know, in the larger picture, yeah, it's a slow crawl. But if, you know, if I understand that, okay, hey, you know, I know where we're going in the smaller digital, in the social media world, when you're creating things, you can, you know, like there's a lot of flexibility. Like, you know, you can do, you know, so many things because New York is so diverse and there's so many ways you can go with New York. So you could tie everything into New York and into the culture of an athletic program while still being under the umbrella of saying, hey, we're New York's team. So,
sure.
You know, in that regard, no, it's not a slow crawl, but in the grand scheme, the big picture of everything and making sure that, right. you know, if I know that, you know, right now, I want the city to know that we're New York's team. And then, mm-hmm. you know, going forward, okay, regionally, I want, you know, them to know that we're New York's team. Then on a national scale, I want St. John's to be synonymous with us being New York's team and no other school, you know. So when someone say it, I don't care what state you're in. Oh, New York's team. Okay, St. John's. Nothing else. No one else. It needs to be synonymous with it. So that's the long term plan. Short term is, you know, it's, you know, you're trying to build to get up to that point.
Sure. Well, I mean, do you think, especially with social media, do you think you can use that as a bit of a testing ground as well? To help ease into that long-term plan and to help set things up better?
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's exactly what we do. I mean, because, you know, a lot of things like you could test out, especially if there's not a lot of eyes on it, you know, right away, you know, you put mm-hmm. some things out and you take that time to just to develop it. You know, and that's, you know, just bit by bit, you know, you put something out, you design something, you create something, maybe you got a good reaction, maybe you didn't, but, you know, I just know at the end of the day, you know, it's like, you need content out there. You need to design content. You got to put content out. And I mean, and eventually, you know, when you look back at everything you created, it's a part of the long-term play, but you know, like, you can't get to the long-term play without all these little monuments and all these little milestones, you know, along the way. So yeah, I mean, it's social media. You know, we use that. It's our primary mode of, you know, how we get our message out. Like that's number one.
Sure. So, as you've been able to grow into the role, and as your role has evolved, you know, what are the challenges that come with that for you?
Well, being in a role for, you know, for so long, there's design fatigue. There's, sure. You're playing with the same colors, you know, year in and year out. So sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, your judgment gets clouded. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I know that feeling well.
Yeah. It's,
been in my job for quite a while, not 11 years, but close.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, like you're just trying to stay fresh and trying to stay creative. But, you know, what I've learned, and, you know, there's several things that I currently do just to stay fresh. So, you know, you don't mm-hmm. get fatigued with design.
Sure.
One of the things is, you hire to your weakness. Mm-hmm. you know, our staff is, you know, we have a lot of graduate assistants, so it's like 2-year roles, and they come in and out every 2 years, mm-hmm. which is a good thing because I have a chance to hire designers, mentor them, train them up so they could go off and get a full-time job, you know, immediately after graduating. But at the same time, you know, the last couple of years, you know, I had an opportunity to hire someone who, you know, she was a fantastic illustrator. Now, I can't draw. I'm not a drawer. I don't know how to draw. You know? That's not me. But she's a fantastic illustrator, and she brought something to the department that we hadn't had. And it brought a different life to the materials that we produced because she brought something that we didn't have. So having the chance to just be a creative director over her and just let her do her thing, that added just another source of just being fresh. And another thing is the work that you do outside of your full-time job, and just me having the opportunity to just to do some freelancing, and you'll talk to different people and you'll mess with some different colors, mess with some different styles, and you're working on different projects, and those are the things that maybe you pick something new up and then you bring it back to wherever your full-time job is, and you work on some different things there, so that helps you stay fresh as well. So it's a combination of a lot of things, for me.
Sure. So since you brought up the freelancing, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, aside from in college when you were, designing flyers for the fraternity and, doing little things here and there for, I'm hoping some extra money. though I know, being in a fraternity myself and having design stuff for them, I know I never got paid for those things. all the other stuff I tried to, the fraternity stuff just never paid off. but did you keep freelancing kind of on the side all throughout, or did you? When you got out of school and you're going to work for right away, did you drop freelancing for a while and just focus on the job and then pick it back up?
No. So it was more of a, I used this term slow crawl before, that's a few seconds ago, but again, this is another slow crawl where I didn't do any freelancing. When I graduated, I guess I was freelancing. I guess that's what you called it in college. I didn't get paid much, but once I started St. John's, I think I had been there for about a year, and then I started freelancing and doing some consulting work. At that point, I've been doing it since then. Honestly, and my schedule is. I mean, now I'm a well-oiled machine where, it takes a little discipline to knowing that, okay, well, I have the regular 9 to 5, but from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m., I'm burning the midnight oil, knocking out projects. So it takes a certain level of discipline to get to that point. You have to train your body and just, train your mind, to work at night and knock it out, and then wake up in the morning and do it again.
Sure. So, out of curiosity, how many hours of sleep a night are you getting?
On a great night, so normally at 2 o'clock is usually my cutoff time. At 2 o'clock, regardless of where I'm at in the project, what I'm doing,
you're probably getting punchy by then, right?
No. Usually, I'm good. Maybe once every 3 weeks or so, I'm falling asleep at the computer. Now I'll just go to bed, whatever. I'll go to bed. I'll go to bed at 2 o'clock and then I'm up 7. So 5 hours, if I could get 5 hours, which I normally get, that's a great day. And I choose not to do any designing like a Friday night or Saturday night. That's for me to stay sane. I just don't work those nights and I just kind of do what I want and, pick it back up Sunday night and go again to Thursday.
Gotcha. Because you've got kids, right? You've got a wife and kids, right?
Yeah. I got a wife and 2 kids, 5-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Oh, so is the 1-year-old sleeping through the night yet?
Oh, yeah. Look, hey, I just said I was disciplined. Imagine the type of routine I put my kids on, man. They both sleep.
Babies don't always like to follow the routine you try to put them on, though. Speaking from experience with my kids.
Hey, well, I mean, mine's did. Mine's were always good with sleeping through the night. And
you got lucky, man. You got lucky.
Yeah. Well, and even the first one, my first child, we had a good rotation. My wife, we'll put her to bed at 9 o'clock. And then my wife would go to bed. Then I'm up anyway. I'm working. I'll be on the computer. I said, all right, well, our daughter's going to wake up maybe about 1:30 for a feeding. I'll go ahead and feed her then. you know, feed her for, you know, 30 minutes, put her back to bed, and then I'll go to bed. And then my daughter wouldn't wake up until 6, and then my wife would wake up and get her at 6 o'clock. So she had a chance to get a full, like, 7 or 8 hours of sleep, and I'm going to bed at my normal time. So everything worked out. Okay. You know?
So, well, that's not too bad then. That's pretty good balance.
Yeah, no, yeah, you know, we had a good a good routine. Good routine.
Gotcha. I have twins, and my kids never, especially when they were babies, never slept at the same time.
See, twins.
So
a different ball
one
game.
Of us was always up and going, and it was that was rough. I look back on pictures now, and it looks like, you know, I had some, you know, terminal disease. That looks so rough in them.
Yeah. Twins is a different ball game. I don't know how you did it.
I didn't know any different. So it's the only way I kept sane.
Right.
So, well, getting back to the freelance, you know, you're 9 to 2. When you're starting out, I'm assuming you're like everybody else and your clients are kind of low level and you're just picking up what you can find that's interesting and, you know, isn't just rock bottom price and growing from there. But you've had the opportunity to work with some fairly high level, you know, companies and programs and things. How did you progress to that point? How did you build those relationships to get in the door and be able to do work with them?
Honestly, it was lots of prayer, some dumb luck, honestly, and then just being ready when the opportunity just kind of presented itself.
Sure.
I mean, like, there was, when I started freelancing, like, I wasn't looking to freelance. Someone had approached me and said, hey, you know, would you be open to, you know, freelancing? And I said, yeah, sure. You know, like, he didn't want to step on anyone's toes or anything like that. And I wasn't so certain because I worked in college athletics, like, if I could even do this for, like, even other college programs. So I talked to, you know, like, the next day I went to the compliance office just to make sure that, hey, you know, like, can I do this if I'm designing for other people, blah, blah, blah. And they said, yeah, it was fine. You know, there are some technical things that I have to do, like, inside the school, but it was fine. So, you know, I started freelancing. You know, at that point it was for a smaller school, and I was doing that for a few years. And then I got to the point where I was only designing for them, and I didn't know, like, you know, what my, like, the ultimate plan for my life was. Like, yo, what am I doing? Am I supposed to just be designing for this one school all my life? I mean, like, you know, what's happening here? And I was frustrated, and I had just tore my Achilles, so I was at home. So I had a lot of time to just kind of sit there with my cast on, just thinking and reflecting. And I was literally at the point of just quitting design, because I said, you know, like, there's no point in doing this anymore. And so I said, all right, if I'm going to stop doing it, I'm just going to send out a bunch of cold emails, you know, like cold calls. I was going to just a bunch of solicitations. Just so I know, I laid it out, you know, all on the table, because I'm done. Right after I sent this email, I'm done designing.
Sure.
So I sent out a bunch, and then a couple of people got back to me. One was Michigan, and I guess the guys there had seen my work around New York, because they used to work for the Knicks. And I'm like, oh man, you know, that's a coincidence. So, you know, I started doing work for them, and then Northwestern, you know, I've done some work for them, and just kept those relationships going. And I think that was the point in 2012 that, you know, work really started to pick up on the freelance side, and it started to help me out creatively. Even, you know, if I'm applying it to, you know, my full-time gig, it's just, you know, you can see so many other colors and variations of how people think and operate. It was like a win-win for both, because, you know, freelancing helps me out at St. John's, and St. John's, the work that I do there, helps me out on the strategy side. You know, if I want to implement a strategy, I can implement it there. But anything design-wise and creative, I can just use from the freelancing world and say, okay, like they're both, like, helping each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me. So, speaking to that matter, when you're, because at St. John's, you've really had an opportunity to shape and create the brand and make it something that you have ownership over. When you're doing freelance for, whether it's Michigan or Northwestern or the stuff you've done with the NBA or things like that, they have their own brands in place and they have pretty strong voices. When you come in, how are you able to adapt to their to what their brand is? How are you shifting gears and getting out of, I can't think of the right word for it, but basically getting out of the path that you've carved for yourself at St. John's to be able to adapt to the new clients?
I don't think it's that difficult at all because, I don't know, just for me, it was always easy to turn it off and on.
Sure.
Basically, I mean, because number one, it's all sports. It's all sports design. So it's not like I have to go from corporate identity to, designing for a college athletics team. You know, it's sports design is sports design. But at the same time, you know, it's, you know, just having the opportunity to just experiment with different colors, different textures, and, you know, just having to communicate, you know, via email through a lot. Like you can see like the instructions or the, you know, the brief or whatever, you know, for the project, mm-hmm. you kind of get a better understanding of, you know, what it is that they want. And a part of it, like, you're just excited to, you know, not design in red and white. Like you know, you're definitely open to just like, okay, well, this is new. So like you go all in, you know, once again. And, you know, colleges are a little different because, you know, there's a lot of restrictions and there's certain colors that you have to play with. So like eventually, you know, that could get tiring as well. But a lot of stuff that I've done for the NBA, like every project is, you know, most of the projects are different where, you know, everything has to be fresh and new. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's the things that, you know, that has a strong brand guideline where you kind of have to stick to the footprint. But, you know, if you've been in the business a while, you can easily turn it off and on again and get into whatever mold you have to get yourself into.
Sure. Well, I'm curious about that of, you know, finding that voice within sports design, because I'm not a sports guy. I don't have a problem with sports. It's just not my passion in life.
Yeah.
But I look at sports design and I'm fascinated by it because there's such a level of depth and complexity to the way things are composited together. And, you know, you've got to take all of these different elements and piece them together to create something cohesive. And to do it right takes a lot of work and a lot of practice. And there's plenty of people out there who aren't doing it right. When you're building on these things and learning the skills behind it, how do you pass that on to the designers that are under you? And then how does that inform what you do in the future? I know that's a really complex question.
Yeah. No, so it all depends on the level of designer you have underneath you.
Sure.
Since I work at a college and I deal a lot of times with students, graduate mm-hmm. assistants, or people, you know, they're more so like entry level designers. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to try to teach someone sports design, like, mm-hmm. in the way, you know, sports, like you described sports design, you know, it's a complex design. Whereas now, like, you know, some of the things are shifting more toward, minimalistic and simple, mm-hmm. simple designs. But in the larger picture, it's still like a complex thing with sports design. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I do, like, I'm an open book, and I realize that if you're dealing with, you know, students or entry-level designers, you know, I'll give them my layered files. So like, hey, look, you know, just play around with the files just to see how things are layered. just to show how things are being created. And, you know, and you start small. You give a project, hey, build this little template, or, you know, these are the tools. These are some adjustments you can use. You know, go into Camera Raw, play with this. Okay, add this flare, add this. So, like, it's a slow, you just have to introduce it bit by bit, bit by bit. And hopefully, sure. Something sticks with them, because, like, you can't teach sports design. Like, the guy, you know, Zach Loxton from Old Hat had told me, you know, either you have it or you don't. Like, either you know how sure. to design it for sports or you don't. Like, it's just sure. one of those things, and you just kind of hope that the designers underneath you, you know, can learn, and you just hope that you're a good teacher to teach them to design the way it should be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. When you're mentoring these students, how much of it do you feel like, as you're teaching them and talking to them and helping them grow, how much of it do you feel turns back around on you and helps you grow as a designer?
All of it, a lot of it, because it's given me the chance to see, okay, well, how good of a teacher am I? Can I successfully explain to them how to design? Because, you know, that lets me know, like, you know, do I even understand what the heck I'm doing? Or a lot of times I can, you know, like, there's something about just saying something verbally where you're listening to yourself. And
right.
So if I'm talking something out to them, I may hear something and I said, like, oh, wait a minute, I just got inspired by something. Or they'll say something and then, you know, I get inspired by something that they said. But, you know, just along with that, you know, it's like a motivation, because, you know, I've had several people, you know, like my very first assistant that I've had, where I taught her how to design from scratch. She walked into my office and she had an interest in it. So I taught her, you know, hey, do this. You know, this is how you cut a player out of a photo. This is what you do. Like, I mean, literally, like, I opened Photoshop for the first time with her. And now she, you know, she has a career in design, you know, which is like, man, you know, I share that story all the time. And, like, you know, someone else, like, you know, I taught how to the fundamentals of layering and videos, video editing. And he, you know, he's not a video editor at the MLB. You know, someone else, like my last graduate assistant, where I just, she was, like I said, a fantastic illustrator, but just, you know, she found her voice, like, you know, under my, you know, under my arms, and she found her voice and she became a better designer. And now she's, you know, doing work at Notre Dame football. And then there's someone else who, like, right after he left me, he got a job at Arizona State, and now he runs the digital and social for the NCAA. So, you know, I realized that, hey, maybe I am doing something right, because, you know, people are learning and they're growing. And it's an inspiration to me to see that other designers are flourishing in the field of design. So it's like, okay, well, I'm just happy that they're successful, you know, in doing what they're doing. And it motivates me even more just to get better, because I know that they're probably looking at me for inspiration. But I'm looking at them for inspiration.
Sure. Do you think that mentorship role for you is more important because you were self-taught growing up, that, you know, that it means a lot more to be able to share what you weren't necessarily getting from others?
Yeah. Even though I feel it was harder for anyone who did, you know, shout out to all the designers who came up before YouTube, you know, it was harder then because we didn't have the resources that there are now.
Sure.
And I feel like anyone who doesn't know, like, if they want to learn how to design and, you know, if they're making excuses, I just look at them and say, like, man, you have no excuses. Like, you have youth. Like, everything is available at your fingertips. There's no excuses to not learn it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, me being self-taught, and if I could have some type of influence over someone, and they if they have a desire to learn, they have a desire to want to be a better designer and to be in the industry, I'm an open book, because everything that I've learned, like, I didn't pay for it, so I'm not going to be stingy with the knowledge. I mean, it's up to you. Like, if you really want it, like, I'll tell you anything you want to know. It's just a matter of, you know, hey, what are you going to do with it? You know, if you're going to apply it to your job and apply it to the project, great. You know, I want you to do that. It helps me out, you know, because I love, like, just teaching people, mentoring people, and watching them grow. You know, I just think more people should just offer up to be a mentor to somebody, even in an unofficial capacity, because, you know, it helps you out just as a person, because you put good in the world, good will come back to you.
Yeah. So I want to touch on this real quick, because the initial way that you and I got in touch is I put out a call for wanting to talk to more people of color in design. Cause I saw that I didn't have as much diversity on the show as I would like. I'm curious what your experience has been as a designer who's Black, within academia, within academia, especially in a very niche down version of sports design at a college and university.
Right. Look, I mean, I definitely, you know, understand, you know, what it is. I was featured in the, you know, someone had did a write up of, it was in February last year, that, you know, they were saying 28 Black designers, and it was
That Marcus Cherry?
No, I don't.
Or Maurice Cherry? I mean,
no, I don't think it was Maurice Cherry. I think I forget the guy's name. I'm sorry. You know,
there's two people who do it, and I can't remember I can never remember the other guy's name.
Yeah, I can't remember. But, you know, but he, you know, so he featured me, and, you know, I mean, it was a really good piece. I'll share it with you, you know, after the podcast, but. I realize, you know, that I am a minority, like, it's number one, a minority in the field of design. But, you know, being at St. John's, you know, St. John's is, you know, the second most diverse campus in the country, or, you know, in New York, you know, second to Queens College. You know, so it's a diverse student body, you know, and it's a diverse population. And I know that whatever it is that, you know, that I do, you know, I know who I represent, I know what I represent, and I know where I come from. But at the same time, like, when you're designing something, no one sees color, no one sees background, no one sees any of that stuff. But the people who do see it, like, if I'm creating something and, you know, people see that, oh, he's done work for the NBA. I know that there's some high schooler, you know, in the inner city of Detroit who, you know, who maybe hadn't thought about getting into design. And maybe he sees my story. Maybe he sees, like, what I'm doing. And he wants to, you know, pick up a computer and learn how to design, or say, man, you know, yeah, he conducts himself well. Oh, he works at a university. You know, maybe that'll inspire him to go to college or, you know, work at a university, or, you know, anything, you know, along those matters. Cause I just think that, you know, if young people of color, you know, see people who look like them, talk like them, and are interested in the same things as they are.
Sure.
You know, it's only, you know, a positive thing. I mean, because
you know, I agree.
You know, we don't live in a monochromatic society. So, you know, the pieces that we create, where we create it, and the offices that you're in should reflect what this world is. And it's a very, very diverse world. And I think all departments should be as diverse as possible. And one thing, you know, quickly, you know, that I pride myself on at St. John's. So in our department, we won, like, all these national awards last year. It was, like, the most in NCAA history, or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
I saw that. Yeah, I was impressed.
It was crazy. I mean, I can't even believe we won that many awards. But it wasn't the actual work that was done. I always credit it with the diversity of the staff that we had, because every single person came from a different background, had different interests, came from a different part of the country, different part of the city, inner city. The country, out west, everybody was different. And it was because of that makeup of our staff that we won all those awards, because the work that we produced, it, you know, it had a lot of input from a lot of, you know, people from, you know, different parts of the different parts of the country. And that's why diversity is so important. You produce your best work in a diverse environment.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're working in, you know, and I don't think this matters what your background is, but if you're working in a homogenized area where everybody's, you know, looks like you, talks like you, thinks like you, and all that stuff, your work's only going to go in one direction, and it's not forward.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's just going to stay on a steady plane.
Yeah.
And if you have, you know, people who have different ideas than you and who have different life experiences than you and all of that stuff, it can only help it grow.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I agree. So,
well, you know, we're getting kind of close to our time, and I'm curious what you've got going on that you can talk about, that may be exciting coming up, and what you're looking forward to.
Right now, like, it's the, you know, I've learned to appreciate the summer, you know, since, you know, since I designed at a school, and, you know, I have lots of clients who, you know, that's on a sports schedule. I appreciate the summer. So, you know, whenever there's a chance just to enjoy some downtime, I'm going to embrace it. You know, it's picking up, fall is picking up. Right now, I think I'm working on like a basketball ticket book. So Northwestern just opened up this fantastic facility. They put a lot of money into it. You know, I think it's their inaugural season. So yeah, I'm working on like just a ticket book for them. And then I know the NBA season is about to gear up, but you know, right now I just finished up, you know, some summer league stuff. The NBA 2K league is going on right now. So just, you know, just work for that. And then at St. John's, I mean, we have some big things planned for this upcoming season and this upcoming year hopefully capitalize off of fingers crossed, you know, a big season from our men's hoops team. You know, we're just gearing up for that. So definitely a lot of exciting things right now. And, you know, what I'm looking forward to, I'm looking forward for basketball season to start. I'm a basketball head. You know, I love the NBA. I'm a Pistons fan. I'm a LeBron fan. I'm a college basketball fan. I'm just excited, you know, just for the season. I'm waiting for October 13th. College hoops kicks off. Preseason NBA kicks off. Couple months away. I'm ready.
Cool. Well, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, Mikael Jackson, M-E-K-A-L-E, Jackson. Instagram, at Mikael, M-E-K-A-L-E. And my website is MikaelJackson.com. You can follow me. I'll shoot me a message. I'll follow back.
Awesome. And we'll link to all this stuff in the show notes so people can find you.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Cool. Mikael, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight. I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Go out and hug some necks.
All right.
You can find out more about Mikael on Twitter at Mikael Jackson, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, over at CreativeSouth.com, and I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATE15CS at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code Creative South. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.